We've got quite a few things that we want to get through. The next two topics are fairly important. So we were trying to get started somewhat on time. We're a couple of minutes late already. With that, I'm just going to go ahead straight into it and pass it over to Richard to take us through the next session. Thanks, Richard.
Okay, for this one, we'll be looking at the common practice. And if you move to the next slide, and these will be the agenda items for this session. And next slide, and the next one. Okay. This section on the common practice analysis is mainly for the benefit of the new members, those who weren't a part of XQRT before, just to give you a better understanding of what the common practice is. Now, the IFRS taxonomy was originally structured to contain concepts based purely on the IFRS disclosure requirements as found in the bound volume. And in 2011, the trustee strategy review required us to develop a relevant number of extensions for the existing taxonomy, which reflects common practice items, which are items commonly reported by various preparers. There are various benefits to this for preparers. There's a benefit of reduction in number of extensions created, reduction in cost and time. For users, there's also benefits in terms of increased comparability.
Australian Securities and Investments Commission
has joined the conference.
Okay. For users, there's the benefit of increased comparability and facility of data consumption. Next slide. Okay. For the common practice analysis, it pretty much involves three stages. The first one, we select a sample. I'm not going to go into detail in that now. I'll go into it in more detail in another slide to come. And after we have selected our sample, which normally would consist of 50 companies, then we review the financial statements for any new concepts or new common practice items. And once we have identified them, then we select which items that we'll choose for common practice.
Has joined the conference.
And the criteria that we normally use for selection is normally a threefold process. First, we look at the frequency. So we have a benchmark of 10%. So of the 50 companies that we analyze, once we have identified a particular line item which occurs at least 10% of the times, then we will select it for potential inclusion as a common practice. And then sometimes the benchmark might not be met, but a particular item might be considered worthy of being included in common practice because of materiality. Probably a user or preparer might particularly speak to us and ask us about particular items in the common practice. Then there's also the issue where that common practice items must not conflict with IFRSs. So whatever is required to be disclosed in the bound volume, as long as the potential common practice item doesn't conflict with it, then we can consider it for inclusion. And in the next slide. So as I mentioned earlier on, the common practice project started in 2011. And in 2011, we selected approximately 200 companies from which we analyzed and identified a number of common practice items to be included in the current IFRS taxonomy. In 2012, 13, and 14, we continued with a similar approach in terms of identifying various industries to be analyzed, from which we would, of course, select potential common practice items for inclusion in the IFRS taxonomy. Next slide. Okay, so now coming back to sample selection, which I had earlier on mentioned. Now, in selecting our samples, we have a database of companies which are drawn from this list of four that you can see, the MSCI Index, S&P Europe 350, SEC IFRS filers and a long list of listed companies that we have. And in using this database, what we do is that we apply certain selection criteria to it. So we look at the number of companies involved, we look at investor interest, and we look at the nature of activities. The nature of activities in our case would be industries. And if you just go to the next slide. So here you can see some summary statistics of the current industry that we're looking at. Because what we normally do is that we will look through the database, select various industries according to their percentage representation in the current database. And at the bottom you'll see other, which includes industries already analyzed and yet to be analyzed. And before we move on to the next section, if there's any questions on what I've just said. Okay. Currently we're looking at transport and pharma industries. We have already completed our empirical analysis and we have identified potential common practice items. And here we're going to just discuss some elements of our findings and what feedback you can give us on them. Now this one I've entitled Owned Leased. So from our analysis, and this pertains to transport, we identified two potential common practice items being aircraft under finance lease, remember, and owned aircraft. And these are very specific items which pertain, of course, as you can see, just to aircrafts. However, there is a possibility of making these more general and therefore creating a general access for them, which can actually be used not only for aircraft but other fixed assets or the assets in the PP&E notes, and you can see the access would be types of rights, and then underneath it, as children would have ownership and finance lease. The advantages in the next slide. The advantages of this is that in creating the general access, we can actually use these for other classes of PP&E, and it can also be used for other notes. However, at the same time, the disadvantages would include that it might be an overcomplication creating a general access from what we've originally identified. And there could also be a potential overlap with other notes in that what could be reported in, say, leases could also be reported under the general access. But a regulator might require a preparer to report a particular item using a structure currently in leases, but then the preparer might be able to do the same thing under the general access. So it could cause an overlap and probably a conflict there. So the question that we're asking is, should we consider a general access? Okay, the default member is the member for which there are children. So like for example, okay, using this example, types of right access, the default member in this case would have been all types of rights, and then you'd have ownership and finance lease under it as members. So we haven't included the default member, but the default member would have been all types of rights.
In the upper half of that side, the line item would be aircraft, right? You flip the slide, forget it. On the bottom half of that slide, you had the two members on the bottom. The line item would be aircraft in this example that you found in common practice, right?
Yeah.
And then you pick.
The line item most likely would be PP&E.
Yeah.
Okay, so then aircraft would be
and then
a different member on a different axis.
On the
Okay.
Or you could use a line item aircraft too, but
okay. It first thoughts is it seems like an overcomplication to have an extra axis for ownership and finance lease, because you obviously could use many other places because everything is owned, and you'd have to take every tag that had lease in it and potentially delete that tag and change it to a more generic tag and then use the lease member with it. So you'd end up getting situations where there's two ways to tag a certain thing. If you just put this axis in there, there'd be two ways to tag a leased item. One, by just using a line and it says whatever leased item. And the other way to use the member that specifies the leased item. So caution there. In all the experience of tagging, I don't think I've ever come across the need to have a ownership and a finance lease member. So yes, this is common practice, which I think is a small portion of one industry. So, you know, my first thoughts are don't go overboard on a portion of a one industry.
Richard, do you remember the count? I think the count was borderline, wasn't it?
It was.
So it's not that it was very common.
Five or ten.
It was borderline.
Was like five out of 50, so it's like 10%, which is our usual threshold for including or not including an item at all. So we were almost at the line of not creating those members at all.
And again, that's of one industry, so adding an access for a small portion of one industry just seems involved. So, but that's one opinion.
Well, aircraft is an interesting topic. Because we have extensive discussions on this in the Netherlands around it in the banking taxonomy. Aircraft is being used in the credit reporting taxonomy that is used by the retail banks, commercial banks in the Netherlands. So it is an extension of the annual reporting. So if you're okay, then I will have a look at it, how that is defined in the Dutch taxonomy, because it's quite extensive definition about how say the valuation and lease of aircraft is incorporated in the credit reporting that go to the bank.
Any impact, you know, any information about other taxonomies and other cases is always interesting for us and can be taken into account. So if you could do that, we would appreciate it.
Any other thoughts?
John wanted it to be quick, so it's quick. Next.
Okay. Okay. So the next one is accounting policies. In the IFRS taxonomy, it lists accounting policies as one long list of high-level accounting policies, as opposed to sub-accounting policies with the high-level policies. And in our analysis of common practice this year, we have observed where some preparers actually have sub-policies of a broader accounting policy. Next slide. So in our current taxonomy, this is how we have our structure of accounting policies. Like I said, one long list of high-level accounting policies. And next slide. And as an example, in one financial report that we looked at, you can see employee benefits accounting policies, and beneath it there are three sub-policies attached to that accounting policy. And the next slide. And in this example, you can actually see there's a financial instruments accounting policy, there's a sub-policy for classification, and then a further sub-policy for financial assets at fair value through profit or loss. The next slide. Another item that we identified as potential common practice was the description of accounting policy for warrants. Next slide. Now, with regards to this particular identification, looking at two other financial statements we looked at, There was one that had financial liabilities as the top level, and then there's a sub-level of warrant liability, and there's another one in the blue which just had warrants as the standalone accounting policy. So one has warrant liabilities as sub-policy, whereas the other one doesn't. And the question is asked, next slide. Should we consider creating elements for sub-policies rather than having a general high-level policies? And if the answer is yes, to which level of sub-policies do we go to?
What would be your options in terms of the level of sub-policies? How deep would you go? What would be your proposal there?
Well, currently we only have one level, but we could put two levels, we could put three levels as what we've seen reported. It would involve a bit extra work, but which is why we're asking you the question, if you think we should consider staying with what we have or going with the creation of sub-policies for accounting policies.
I think the problem with accounting policies is the text disclosure. It's not a number. So with the numbers, you practically know, you know, which level of hierarchy you go. With text disclosures, you never know. So there is no, you know, if you go back to the slide when you have shown the warrants policies. So, you know, the first one is financial liabilities seem to be the main accounting policy, although it might be also financial instruments if you move a level up. So even, you know, even for financial liabilities, you don't know if it's level two or level one. I mean, not fair value measurement levels, just levels of the accounting policies. So it's always going to be probably a judgment call. The first question actually is, should we at all go deeper than just the main accounting policies? And then if yes, then maybe let's start thinking of how deep to go. Hello?
Anybody else? You were
here? Yeah, well, I'm just asking in terms of the discussion this morning, like the ontologies, and the way how deep you would go in defining the textual elements. So has that been discussed or analyzed? Whether we should not go that direction?
That's maybe a question to other, you know, people that are familiar with different taxonomies, up to which level it's worth to go, because we have no experience in that. So far we have analyzed the first level of the accounting policies, so the main accounting policies, assets, inventories, property, plant, equipment, income taxes, and so on. But there is, you know, huge diversity in practice of how people report accounting policies. You know, some break down income tax into deferred and current, some don't. For some, even they don't have an accounting, or they don't disclose an accounting policy for current tax. They just disclose the accounting policy for deferred tax, which makes it actually a higher level accounting policy than it would have been had they had the policy for current tax. So we have no, that's why the question is there. I think we're just looking for ideas and comments, maybe places we should look at to determine where we should go.
I went first last time.
Okay, Marshall. Just to contribute, what we've done with the UK taxonomies and the new ones in draft at the minute, where we've got text tags, we've actually gone the other way. And instead of having, you know, five tags to cover various paragraphs, we just compacted them into a single tag, just for simplicity. And I think that you've got a lot more free form, as we say, in sort of these text accounting policy notes.
So you're suggesting the highest level?
I'm kind of have
an accounting policy for income tax and whatever people do within.
So for question one, I'm saying my answer is no. I guess it'd be, I don't know if anyone's got any sort of views in terms of the users of the data, whether they, you know, the consumers of the data, whether they prefer a more granular level of detail.
But if you could go back, Władek, to the previous slide, if you see the second company, the blue one, they have a separate accounting. They seem to have a separate accounting policy that is called warrants. So that does that already, you know, allow us to should we then, if that's common, should we create an accounting policy for that, or would you still prefer us to do the analysis in a sense, okay, warrants are financial instruments, so actually let's, you know, leave it at the financial instruments level.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard just from that, from the bottom half of that slide to see where it fitted in with other notes. I mean, what I don't know at the minute is whether the taxonomy has the capability to sort of deal with special accounting policies, or are they just left untagged?
The taxonomy has a number of accounting policies that either are required by IFRSs, which is the case, I don't know, 5-6 times, inventories, some, but it's unusual, let's just say that.
Yeah.
And we have about, I don't remember how many, 40, say, accounting policies, maybe more, for anything that we found common in financial statements, analyzing the top level of the accounting policies only, because we never went into the other levels.
I mean, I guess if, you know, if warrants, by its own category, is becoming a common accounting policy, then no objection to having its own tag. I guess my general answer was just that, you know, what we've done in the UK is moved away from sort of drilling down and just having more sort of general text tags.
This is Tom Egan. I have a comment, more from a technical accounting standpoint. It strikes me as that when you did this, you ended up with the slide, the defined contribution plan as being common, because it is common, but the information, the policy somebody would actually want is the defined benefit plan disclosures, which is less common now. Fewer parties get pensions, but that's actually what they would be looking for, is that policy. The defined contribution thing is, you know, repay whatever the regulatory rate is in that country. The other thing is long service leave. My experience is that's very, very seldom material. And if that's common that people are putting that in there, I wouldn't know why. Also, I don't know why wages and salaries are considered employee benefits. So generally, when I see an employee benefit disclosure, you know, on accounting policy, it's very, very vague and general. It's kind of like what's, you know, this liabilities are recognized, you know, in respect of employee services up to the end of the reporting period. So I like the detail. I always like the granularity, but in this case, it's completely at odds with what I would actually be looking for as a user in terms of information.
Thanks, Tom.
My sense is, you know, Bartek mentioned that there's a diversity of presentation in the policies. If that's the case, you won't be able to compare much if you want to look at a couple of companies and look at the same set of accounting policy and the subset within that. And from a user's point of view, textual analytics at the very basic usage should be able to throw up the stuff you want, such as warrants or, you know, information within a footnote, so you can extract it fairly comfortably if you're a user, if you want to consume it. Given that's the case, I would think, you know, simplicity is the way to go forward.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that the users, users probably only need to have it tagged at the top level in terms of accounting policies. And if they want to be more specific, then that's where you turn it over to textual analysis. You know, you search for the particular terms you're looking for, and because, you know, it's all this stuff is all text, you would use a different tool to attack that data than something where you're dealing with the numbers.
Yeah, I would say no to creating text block tags for all the subtopics, which I think agrees with Marshall and others. It's almost way too subjective to figure out how deep to go on the subtopics, for one. For two, like you said, when you tag the whole thing, you have tagged the subtopic. It's just part of the general topic tag. So it becomes much easier just to leave it at the top level. The other thing with this warrants one that's on the screen, I think it makes sense to create a warrant tag for text policy if that's the common way to do it. I think it probably is more common than to put it under the heading of financial liabilities. I'm not certain of that, but I wouldn't consider warrants necessarily a sub-accounting policy topic too often. But again, the common practice analysis might show that it is. But otherwise, I think staying away from subtopics is a smart idea for creating extra tags. It'd be a lot of tags that never get used.
I thought I'd put my card up and make it fair, since there was a big queue. I was just going to say that to some extent, what level the policy is at is basically irrelevant once the tag exists, because there isn't, to a certain extent, what level you tag to just depends on the tag existing. It doesn't depend on what level it's in the presentation hierarchy at. So if a warrants tag is created, then whether or not it's subtagged within another block text will depend on the filing system, not what's available in the taxonomy. So to a certain extent, I'm more sort of thinking, if we want to have a proper discussion about which of the policies we include, and somebody might kill me for saying this, it's probably a larger project to actually go and evaluate accounting policies separately, have a look at how common policies are and how commonly they are reported at each of the different levels. But that's just my opinion on that.
And just
you jump into this one?
Yeah, it's, oh, you're, I was, I'll real quick, I didn't know you were up, I'm sorry. From my experience, I think the tags we have in the taxonomy actually fit the general, if you did a common practice study, they fit the ones that are there. Now, I can't say, I don't have a study to show you on that, but I think the ones that are nail most of the topics that are commonly there.
We never went into detail, so our common practice analysis focused always on the highest level. So that's why probably you have the impression that all the most important things are there, because we did focus on the, you know, level one, which captures the most important things. So that's probably the...
Yeah.
So in general, I agree that going into more detail in these text blocks is not going to be useful. And on other topics, I don't know that I would say that, but I think, and I think the first question is really knowing whether you're dealing with a subtopic or not. I mean, that's the first thing you've got to decide, because some of these things may actually stand on their own. But I think it's important to think about text blocks differently than our other tagging. Text blocks is really, it's not detail tagging the way we think about it. It's trying to provide some structure to unstructured data, so that it can be retrieved more efficiently. And that's the way we do it. In our user role, we will, you know, someone in the organization will come to us and say, you know, on some given accounting policy, tell us everything that companies are doing with that policy. And we can pull that very easily, but we're really not, at that point, we're not usually trying to get down into a subtopic. And if we are, then we're just going to use proximity search using a text search at that point anyway. Not anyway, we're going to have to do that regardless of how granular it gets. So I don't think you get a lot for your effort by going to subtopics. And in fact, I would argue that what we've done is gotten too granular in our text blocks. We have one member of our team that would like to roll them back significantly. So.
Any other views? Okay. Just go to the next slide. Okay. Attached to the presentation, we also submitted the findings that we encountered from our analysis of pharmaceutical and biotechnology and transport. And it includes both the accepted and rejected items. So assuming that you have gone through it, are there any comments that you have on the proposed or rejected items?
And if you do not have comments now, please feel free to review those, you know, when you're back, and send us the comments over the next couple of weeks. It's not that we are finalizing it today, so let's say if you need another week or two, that's also fine.
I haven't read these documents which you're referring to. Are these sort of really sort of specific to those sectors, or are we talking general questions like we've just been talking about in the last two questions?
Okay, well there were discovered from our analysis of pharma and transport, but given though that they were identified in these two industries, it doesn't necessarily mean that they can't be used. If another industry were going to prepare their financial statements, it doesn't mean that they can't use them, unless it's something industry specific.
Okay, I'll take a look.
I like to agree to add selling, general, and administrative expense, but I wonder why this emerged at this time, because it appears that this is not industry specific account title.
For some reason, and it appeared as more common than it appeared at the last two industries that we did. It always had a borderline count. This time it went over the border. So it's probably only a matter of sample choice and accident. But at the same time, we've been hearing about this particular element also by other sources than our common practice analysis. So we had one preparer, regulator, whomever, calling us and saying this is an element that is so common, used all over their country. And I don't want to name the country, but it also, we paid more attention to that element, I think, this time, because it was also mentioned by other people. So it's a number of things, but there are other elements. It's just at some, for some industries, for some reason, they appear more common. It's probably a question only of chance, but we don't see a reason why we should exclude them. I mean, even if they don't belong directly to this industry, if we have a good reason to add them because they appear common, they meet our thresholds, use the opportunity, kind of use the opportunity to add some elements, even if they do not necessarily relate directly to the industry.
Have you run these items, or are you planning to run these items past sector analysts who specialize in the sectors you're looking at the moment?
No, we haven't done that. But in our call for participation, I probably should have mentioned it. Normally, at the beginning of the analysis, we normally send out what we call a call for participation, which goes to those who have subscribed to email lists from IFRS. So they will know that we are undertaking this particular analysis on these specific industries. And they will then have the opportunity to give their input into it. So in terms of going to specific analysts, that's as far as we have gone.
But that is definitely something, Jim, that we are considering, really. I think to engage with this type of people, we really needed to first have like some content, that document, which declutters XBRL a little bit, because when we wanted them to focus on the content rather than on the taxonomy files as such. So I think with our role to become, make the content more accessible, this is definitely something that we will consider more and more.
Any other views or comments? Okay, and as Bartek had alluded to, if you have any other views or comments, you can just email them to us, and we'll have a look at them. Okay. Go to the next slide. Okay, as I mentioned earlier on, The call for participation, when we initiate the or common practice analysis, we also send out what we call a call for participation. And as I'd mentioned earlier on, there are various bodies, individuals, institutions who subscribe to IFRS mailing lists. And so we draft a document to detail when the common practice analysis will take place, over what period, what industries we're looking at, and then we encourage various preparers, users, industry groups and regulators, advisors to actively participate in our analysis, be it that they may conduct the analysis at the same time that we're doing it, or they might review the results that we have identified. However, in spite of doing this, we do get some very valid input from various organizations, but generally the response is very low when we do the call for participation. And in light of this, the questions are asked in the next slide. One, do you consider the call for participation useful? Yes or no, and if so, how could we improve it?
Yes, so we've been involved in the various task force projects for the last couple of years, and you know, getting the feedback from the companies involved, they definitely found it useful. And I think we need to promote the idea that, you know, it helps, say, for example, companies understand what resources and utilization they need in order to prepare or, you know, continue if they are reporting in various other jurisdictions. So I definitely think the call for participation is useful. It showed a lot of outcomes on our side, which we discussed in depth with BARTEC. In terms of to improve participation, I think, I suppose it depends. That the main thing really is, as I mentioned earlier, the 20Fs for the SEC. I think if there was any kind of idea of, you know, whether that something's going to be approved in the IFRS taxonomy being approved in the next couple of years, it might encourage companies to somewhat try and get prepared internally, and then might want to get involved in that. But I definitely think that it's very useful.
Maybe to illustrate also in terms of getting some operational data, but I think to involve, say, industry groups also in terms of getting this data defined. I mean, they want to disclose their information and see what they how they'd like to disclose it.
Going to say sorry that, you know, being contacted by someone and asked to take part, I think it always encourages you more to take part. You see things on the IFRS website, ISB website, and you think, yes, I should get involved. But if someone contacts you and asks you to get involved, you're more likely to do it. So I'd say the actual reach out to contact companies is probably the best way forward to get more involvement, but the limitation of which companies at the moment are developing their XBRL.
I agree with what you're saying, and which is what we endeavor to do. However, in spite of our efforts, sometimes people just don't, or rather companies don't respond as we'd like them to. And do you think, I mean, is there something we're doing wrong, or do you think there's something we could do better?
I think the idea already of maybe a more targeted outreach, I think that's a good idea, and we should reflect on a little bit of how we can do it. I think maybe we should also talk for people who have been involved in the past to see, do they have any lessons for us to learn from and things like that. But definitely, I agree with you, Anna, if you just see it's another mail that came in your inbox, no one really prompts you to play an active involvement, so probably by us being a little bit more proactive there could help.
I was going to say as well, I mean, didn't discuss it, but the idea of your update documents being more non-technical and more, you know, sort of accountant or or non-technical focused means that more people can probably get involved in XBRL. It maybe frightened people off a little as well when you get into the technicalities of it, if you want input in terms of comparing new taxonomy elements to people's financials, it's much easier to access the XBRL speak if it's on a sort of much lower level and not too technical for people as well.
So first, you couldn't get so much input from the discourse participation. The question is, maybe similar opinion, but this expected participant the level seems quite high. So maybe in this case, this participant doesn't need to any IFR taxonomy knowledge. So maybe that some people who are working for aggregators or data users have more, maybe they can provide more input, but so these participants are expected, he or she has to know about IFR taxonomy itself, sounds like that. So that maybe only high level people can apply that. High level, I don't know, but so it's changed, little bit changed to this requirement level for participants, and more focused on data users, or maybe more someone who reading IFRS financial statement.
Like for our last common practice analysis, we gave this update documents to all data aggregators, and we received comments from some which was positive, affirmative, like to say yes, the majority of the elements are there. I think the problem with reaching out of the data aggregators, because they do it at a quite high level, yeah, their taxonomies, where we go a little bit more deep dive, I think. But we definitely, I think you raise a good point there as well, Chi, that we have to be aware of the fact that even if we have a content document, the taxonomy as such is still such a huge thing that maybe we have to think more about how we can focus more on particular areas rather than considering the whole, really. So that's a good point there as well.
I hope you have more success at this than we have. We have had success, but not in the way that I would have anticipated. Most of our success has come through the service providers speaking on behalf of the preparers. So organizations like Merrill and Web Filings and others have become a great proxy for participating and providing us really useful feedback. And it's not just, you know, throwing a comment across the bow. We have, you know, quarterly conference calls with these people and just go through all the issues that they're dealing with. And that's been really, really helpful. Prepares as a group, you know, we've got some that are fairly active, but they're tough. And investors, forget about it. And I say that for two reasons. One, they're a tough group to pull together in any case, but they actually, I've concluded that they don't really care about the underlying standard that's being used. They just care about getting the information. What we do, so we focus our time on the data aggregators. I mean, that's what we're about. We're about machine-readable data. They're about machine-readable data. So instead of taking a shotgun approach, we started to focus our energy very squarely on the data aggregators. But even the mainstream, the established data aggregators are tough. The startups, though, are much more likely to be engaged. And so you can get them, to the extent that they're looking, you know, that they're trying to import IFRS data, they will talk to you because they've got issues that they've got to resolve. Some of the established ones are pulling in IFRS data, or they're pulling in other data from around the world, whether it's IFRS or something else, I'm not sure, but they are looking at it. But I would look for proxies in a lot of these cases if you've got them. It's been far more effective for us. We've just had much more luck with that.
Sorry, because my
sorry for my sorry about my boss absence from the session in this afternoon, because she is suffering from both cold and jet lag. Sorry, our opinion is we support the staff of ISB, XBL staff of ISB seeking for participation from people, from practitioners, preparers, and users. But we would like to remind you, the result or the value of the participation from them should not be overestimated. Because in some cases, for example, for element like the net profit loss in a year, we have to, for some reasons, we cannot add it to our common practice, because I think it's almost the same process when we try to treat this in our process of accounting standard setter. So you contact preparers or aggregators or the service providers. If you get a result, it's not expected by you guys or by board members. So how can you deal with this situation? Yeah? Because it's not dependent on our XBIL decision. It's our accounting standard set of the IFRS decision. So it's beyond the capacity of the XBIL team. This is the first kind of case. The second one is because the XBIL filing practice based on different jurisdictional condition environments, they're quite different. For example, and the Louis and Lou, what's happening in the SEC's filing project. And in other jurisdictions, we have to find the right guys to say what it is and what they are expecting for. So it's very hard for you to do without any undue cost to complete this kind of work, to collect enough adequate information to support your decision. And are you ready to establish a mechanism like voting? Because this is IFRS for the global public interest, in the global public interest. So for these two reasons, I thought the value of participation from preparers and even service provider. So call for participation must be very useful, because you have just have mentioned in the last slide, participants are expected to engage with and research and address other items. Yeah, that's valuable, but don't overestimate that.
Anything else, Richard?
No, unless anybody else has anything else to say.
So you've got your, I guess, the feedback questions were correct.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things that we were going to get back to you on. Was it a time?
I think Rita suggested
one
a month.
Dave's coming back to you, and then on the rejected and the first time.
Yeah. I think within one month would be, the sooner the better.
Similar time as there, everything else would be the next.
Yeah. The sooner the better would be good, but within 1 month would be.
I think for the documents within 1 month, I think for the, we are planning to release soon a taxonomy update for common practice and for revenue. So the sooner we get your feedback on these common practice additions, the better, I think. We have a little bit more leeway with the documents than we have with the common practice. Common practice priority, and the quicker the better. Documents, please read, and if you come back within 1 month, we will be happy. That's the message.
That's right. Quick question. Do you have definitions for these items?
No, we haven't created them yet.
Ready.